Chapter 30. Green Bloods. I smell the cook pots as we return to the barracks at dawn, but it isn't gruel Tika has over the fires. I inhale, and my dry mouth begins to water.
"You did the work of men last night," Chika says, "and so you will eat like men. Soft couscous, piled with vegetables and spiced meat, dripping with fat. As much as you can eat."
There is a moment of stunned hesitation, and then we are all hurrying to take a bowl, with the swiftest feet determining order, rather than rank. For perhaps the first time in his life, Fasik eats first.
"There will be no family visits today," Chikka announces. "It will be back to the war tops tonight. For now, eat and sleep. Those who wish a few hours of liberty can leave the grounds this afternoon."
Tika fills my bowl, thrusting a pair of eating sticks to stand upright in the couscous. The sticks remind me of home, of Krasian studies and Mika's cooking. I pick them up expertly, taking a precise portion of couscous and bringing it to my mouth without spilling a grain. The flavour is like nothing I've ever tasted. Perhaps the weeks of gruel play a part, but the food seems to come alive in my mouth, salt and fat and filling starch, rich with hava. I take a bit of meat, lifting it to take a delicate bite.
"You won't do your princess reputation any good, eating like that," Chidan says, coming to join me.
I look around, and he's right. The other boys hold the tilted bowls right to their lips, using the sticks to simply shovel the food into their mouths. Chidan smiles, deftly spinning the sticks in his hand before lifting his own bowl to his lips and using them like a blunt instrument. I'm so hungry, I don't argue, joining the others in savaging the meal. Gorvan is the first to finish his bowl. The burly boy could break Tika in half, but he approaches her as warily as he would a sand demon. We all watch, half expecting such largesse to be snatched away. But when Tika wordlessly refills his bowl, a second line quickly forms. We retreat inside as the sun begins to heat the yard. My mind is still racing with the events of the previous night. The air is already warming as I lie on the stone floor. I think sleep will be difficult to find, but I am so tired, and my belly so blessedly full, that it comes as soon as I rest my head on my arms. In my dreams, I again see the sand demon turn its head to stare at me in recognition. This time I flee, racing along the wall tops, but the calling gives chase, calling my name. I wake with a start, bathed in sweat, and see that I am not alone. Thivan thrashes in his sleep, groaning as if in some illusory pain. Conan sits hugging his knees and staring at nothing, mind trapped in some horror of its own conjuring. All around the room, there are others in a similar state. We are all of us haunted by what we saw in the maze. The drill masters spoke at length of the infinite glory of Alagai Sharak, but they never did justice to its horror. I glance around for Chidan, but he is nowhere to be found. The ban on family waning visits obviously does not apply to the Damaji's grandson. But I am Ni Domin, the second of none. If the Nikar isn't here, it is my responsibility to lead the Sharaj until he returns. I want to offer the boys comfort, but I am in sore need of it myself. I have no words to soothe their fears and pain. "The best leader leads by example," Mother used to say. As often to coerce me into eating my vegetables at state dinners as to advise on governance. Still, as with many of Mother's irritating lessons, I look back and realize she was right. I glance at the windows. It feels like I slept only minutes, but the angle of the light tells me it is midday. I inhale, and the scent of fresh harvest-spiced meat is on the air. My stomach grumbles in response. I look at the other Nisha room, clinging to restless sleep, pacing, staring into space, and clap my hands as loud as I can, sending a resounding crack through the room. Boys start awake, or snap their heads around and crouch as if under attack. Lunch is hot, I say loudly. Tika will be unforgiving if we let it go cold. First come, first served, and every bowl will be full. That shines a light through the bars of whatever mental prisons they were building. I crack my hands a second time to break them free. Now! I turn and start walking as the others scramble to line up behind me. Moments later, we are back in the sun, and Tika's great cauldron has everyone's attention, keeping their minds in the present. Again we eat quickly, as if expecting the food to be snatched away. The speed causes belching, and before long, the boys make foul contest of it, roaring with laughter as they see who can sustain the longest or bring forth the most noxious smell. Princess Olive would have been horrified, but I find myself laughing along. Some of us are going into the city, Fasik says over his bowl. You should come. I can hardly believe it, but Chika and the other drill masters are at the gate, handing each boy a few drachi as we leave the training grounds. For food, he growls. You don't want to be hungry tonight. Don't waste it on Heza, and anyone caught with Koozie will be whipped and have the spirits poured on their bloody back. Gorvan rubs the drachi in his palm together.
Hardly enough for either, unless we want to share a green blood push ting.
The other boys laugh, paying Chikka's threat no mind. But I remember my own whipping all too well, and the sting of Belina's disinfectant. Still, while I have little interest in Koozie or Heza, my ears perk up. Pushting. Gorvan laughs.
Of course Prince Olive would take note of that.
The other boys join him in mirth, but it dies down as my eyes narrow. Have any of you even met a Pushting? I ask. Most drop their eyes at that, but Gorvan is still smiling.
My father says every brothel has Pushting for those with tight purse strings.
There is laughter again, but I have their measure now. Boys are all for raucous talk, but they are parroting their elders rather than speaking from experience or malice. I don't want to see a brothel, but it might be worth it for the chance to learn more. I have questions about myself that perhaps Pushting are better suited to answer. I'm quickly taken in by the sights and sounds of the city. Desert Spear is vast, with buildings dating back hundreds or even thousands of years. Some are grand palaces, but many of the low, sturdy buildings the commoners live in carry as much age and history. I wonder if my father roamed these same streets, wearing away with his sandals the same smooth, ancient stones that I tread upon. I wonder if my father's father walked past this building, or that, or his father before him, and on through the centuries. For a moment, I touch something bigger than myself, and feel a connection to this place, a world away from home.
Mangoes, a voice calls. Mangoes and prickle pears.
I pull up short at the sound of the northern tongue, turning to see a Thesan woman, her skin deeply tanned, but still pale compared with mine, which has darkened in the sun to something close to that of my full-blood compatriots. She has a scarf over her hair, but her face is uncovered, and there is a bit of faded colour in her threadbare robe. She sees me looking, and takes a small prickle pear from her cart, deftly shaving away the spiked skin of the fruit with a heavy knife.
Taste one free, young warrior,
she says in thickly accented Krasian.
6 for a drachi. You won't find a better bargain anywhere in the city.
The green bloods grunt like pigs,
Gorvan says, and Thivan snorts.
You sound piggish yourself, I say, moving to take the fruit the woman holds out to me. I've never tasted prickle pear, and its juicy flesh is cool and sweet in my mouth. I eat it more quickly than I intend, and hand over one of my coins for more.
Are you honestly going to spend your money on fruit? Montidar is incredulous.
Hoping to find some toothless grey chin woman who will lie with you for your 3 drachi, Montidar.
Gorvan laughs.
Even Pushting Heezer have higher standards.
Gorvan isn't my friend, but he is loyal. As third in line, he takes it on himself to enforce Chadan's and my commands, and is quick to chastise any who do not show us proper respect. I let the other boys enjoy a laugh at Montidar's expense before I put an end to it. Quiet, all of you. I keep my voice pleasant. It's not as if Gorvan has touched a woman since they pulled him from his mother. Even Gorvan laughs at that, and they take a few steps back, talking while I turn my attention back to the vendor.
Where are you from? I ask in the northern tongue.
The woman looks startled, but then she seems to notice my blue eyes, and her eyes flick over my skin, noting its shade.
I was born in Eden's vineyard, south of Fort Risen, before the demon of the desert came and gave us to the Maja.
Are you half-blood?
What are you doing with this lot?
The demon of the desert. The schoolbooks say that is what the northerners called my father when he came forth from the desert to conquer southern Theza. But no one has ever dared speak it to my face.
I was born in Hollow. Just after the war, I have only recently come to Fort Crasier.
Honest word, have they opened the borders at last?
There is such desperate hope in her eyes that I wince, knowing I must quash it.
They have not. I am a special case.
No matter, the woman whisks her hand, as if brushing away hope is commonplace for her.
Can you tell me any news? Is Leisha Paper still mistress of Hollow County?
Now it is my turn to be startled, hearing my mother's name 1,000 miles from home. Leisha Paper is Duchess of Hollow, yes.
Duchess?
The woman claps her hands in delight.
My cousin fled to the Hollow when the Crasians came. She begged me to come, but my mother was too old for the journey.
Now, she waves a hand at her cart. Mother died crossing the desert instead, and I live here.
I'm sorry, I say, knowing the words are insufficient.
Again, she brushes the pain away.
It was a long time ago. I've made my peace with it. What of Risen? Did you pass through my home on your way here?
I shake my head.
We sailed across the Great Lake instead. But by all accounts,
I nearly choke on the word father, covering it with a cough.
Here.
The woman hands me a cup, filling it with a splash of water from a jug on her cart. I take it gratefully, drinking.
Our man Jardir has proved a better leader than folk feared.
Everarm's bounty has been prosperous and at peace since the war.
At peace with all save the Maja, since he has no doubt given our homes away.
The woman makes a spitting sound, but wastes no moisture in the dry air. I cannot blame her. The walk through the city has shown me much. The Greenland thralls, brought back with the Maja, have formed a huge underclass in Desert Spear. They, and even their half-blood children, have limited rights, many living in deeper squalor than this fruit seller, when they aren't owned outright by Crasian masters. The owned often live in greater luxury, but I know well that luxury is not the same as liberty. Mother and the histories say that father's conquest was to levy forces in time to fight the demon war, and that he stopped his advance when it ended. But can even that excuse what was done to these people? What would have been done to me if I had humbler parentage? Crasians speak of blood debts that span generations, but if that is true, my debt is vast.
Olive, Can we move on while you grunt at the green blood? Gorvan calls. The day is wasting.
The woman tilts her head at me.
Olive?
Like the Princess of Hollow County?
I have to go, I say quickly, pressing a second coin into the woman's hand before she can react. I hurry after the others.
Did you just pay 2 drachi for a handful of pears?
Thivan is incredulous.
Does that mean you don't want one? I reply.
We wander the city for hours, but Gorvan and Montidar never find Hiza of any sort, or Kuzi for that matter. As the sun begins its descent, they grudgingly spend their coins on spiced meat skewers and fruit nectars on our way back to the training grounds. Chadan is there, looking freshly bathed and fed. The rest of us had a few minutes in the sweat room and a fresh Bido from Tika, but more than anything, I long for a proper bath. I catch Chadan looking at me when he thinks my attention is elsewhere, but he drops his eyes whenever I turn to face him. I wonder if Belina believed his story and if he's been questioned further. But it doesn't matter. It's clear the rules don't apply equally to everyone in Krasia. Alevran isn't going to punish his own grandson, and so long as he believes he needs me for something, he isn't going to punish me any more than he has to. By sunset, we are atop the walls again, each carrying a water skin for thirsty warriors in the maze as we haul slingstones and scorpion bolts within earshot of the Sharum car. Chika's Ni Sharum support my brother directly, as much, I think, for Chadan's benefit as my own. The Sharum car cannot show favoritism openly, but he can keep us close. Iravan catches my eye and gestures for me to come to him. I obey instinctively, though the sight of him brings with it an ugly churn of emotion. I want to hate my brother. Part of me still does. But even I was inspired by his courage in the night. Wherever the fighting was thickest as they retook the maze, Iravan was there. He is the best fighter I have ever seen. Graceful, quick, and precise like Mika, but with another 100 pounds of muscle and far greater reach. My threat of a blood debt against him was foolish posturing. Even after weeks of near-constant training, Iravan could kill me in 3 strokes. I keep my eyes on the wall, saying nothing as I approach. Iravan does not take his attention from the sands beyond the gates, as he hands me a satchel.
Mother wanted you to have this.
I take the soft leather bag, understanding its purpose before I even open it. Father had one just like it, back at Gatherer's University. I open it to find herbs, a small mortar and pestle, tongs, and other healing implements. I turn it over to reveal the hidden sheath built into the back of the bag, containing a curved Hanzar dagger. And not just any Hanzar. A thin scrap of brown leather covers the jeweled hilt, but I recognize it all the same as I half draw the blade. It is the very knife Belina tried to sell me all those months ago in Achman's Bazaar. No doubt this one has magic the Darmating can turn against me as well, but I cannot deny I feel safer with a warded blade. In both our cultures, words and a show of gratitude are expected upon receiving such a valuable gift. But I offer no thanks. My forgiveness won't be bought so cheaply.
Healing will be easier with this.
Healing is a woman's art,
Iravan says. I was raised a woman, I say. He turns to look at me.
And what are you now?
I meet his gaze. Your prisoner.
Iravan points to the maze floor, where a familiar beta stands, restored by Darmating demon bone magic.
A prisoner would not leap down into the maze to save a warrior from an enemy tribe.
I don't ask how he knows. The Avisia says all men are brothers in the night.
So you are a man, Iravan notes.
Are women not all sisters in the night? I ask.
Are we not all siblings?
Women sacrifice no less than men when the demons come.
You are a woman, then.
I thrust the blade back into its sheath, irritated at his passing of words. Your mind is too small to understand what I am, brother. The words are dangerously close to my secret, but in my anger I don't care. My grip on the hilt of the Hansar is so tight, I feel the gemstones cutting through the leather. Drillmaster Chika approaches before Iravan can reply. My brother turns his eyes back to the sands, careful not to be seen giving me too much attention.
Return to your post.
I bow and sling the satchel strap over my head, resuming my work. The callings rise in numbers as the sun's last light slips away, but not as great as I remember. Drillmaster Chika seems to agree.
There are less of them. Perhaps the storm is passing.
Perhaps, Iravan echoes, but he sounds unconvinced. Laborers have spent the day hauling away the stones the demons brought, but we all know how quickly they can be replaced.
Raise the portcullis for a few minutes only.
Iravan's new hornblower gives the command, and again the great gears turn, letting a wave of demons through before dropping the heavy gate back down, crushing any callings unfortunate enough to be under the arch. The baiters whoop and clash their shields, leading the demons as they did the night before. But there is an edge to everyone's nerves tonight. Hidden in ambush pockets and gatehouses throughout the maze, more than triple the number of Sharum lie in wait. If there is another trick tonight, Iravan means to be ready for it. But he isn't. None of us are, as horns begin blowing from another part of the city. The Greenblood Quarter.
They've breached the wall,
Iravan says, listening to the pattern of the horns.
Is that even possible? Drillmaster Amarj asks. No demon has entered the city in 3,000 years.
Iravan ignores him.
Sound the alarms! Every citizen to the Undercity!
With respect, Sharum Kar, Chikka interjects. The Undercity hasn't been used in 20 years. The palaces and full-blood districts will have maintained their entrances, but the Chin won't even know where theirs are.
Iravan is already moving.
Chika, you and your students are with me. Amarj, you have the gate. Signal Kai Undan that the maze is his until I return. Keep the portcullis closed and kill the Alagai inside as quickly as possible. We may need reinforcements.
Where are we going?
Chika's tone makes it clear he already knows and does not approve.
To get the Chin to the Undercity.
Iravan turns to Conan.
The Chisharum know the district best and are better prepared to lead the evacuation. Find their Kai and have him send his men ahead while we muster a force of Dalsharum to seal the breach.
Conan punches a fist to his chest and runs off. Thivan and Rekaj are similarly sent to alert the Kai of the elite units Iravan wants at his back. Chikka frowns.
The Alagai may be trying to take our attention from the gate. How many warriors can we spare to defend the Chin Quarter?
Unspoken is the sentiment many of the Sharum seem to share. No Chin is worth a full-blood warrior's life. Iravan moves faster than I would have believed possible, punching Chika in the face and dropping him to the wall top.
We are one people in the night, Drillmaster. I will not leave anyone, from the Damaji himself to the lowest Chin beggar, to the Alagai. Suggest otherwise. Say anything other than your will, Sharum Kar, and I will throw you from this war.
Your will, Sharum Kar.
Chika groans. I meant no offence.
My brother casts his gaze around at the other warriors, staring at the scene.
That goes for all of you.
As one, man and boy alike punch fists to their chests.
Your will, Sharum Kar.
Iravan's eyes turn to me. I grit my teeth, but he's right, and everyone is watching. I put my fist to my chest.
Your will, brother.
Nika,
Iravan turns to Chadan.
You will command the Nisha room of all four Sharaj, Fullblood, Half, Kafit, and Chin. Assist in the evacuation of the Greenbloods and escort them to the Undercity, while the Chisha room holds the Alagai at bay. Go to the armory first for shields.
Why not spears?
Gorvan dares ask. Chika cuffs him on the back of the head. So you're not tempted to do something foolish, boy.
Iriven nods.
You're not here to fight. When the last of the Chin make it to the Undercity, you're to lock yourselves in with them until dawn.
We run along the wall to the Chin quarter, where the source of the breach is obvious. Cracked and upended paving stones lie in scattered ruin around a mound of soil like a gigantic molehill. The Corlings managed somehow to tunnel beneath the wall and find a gap in the wards. It shouldn't be possible. The walls of Desert Spear are legendary, and the guile and forethought to plan such an attack should be beyond demon ken. Yet, sand and clay demons are pouring through the breach. They were contained last night. The maze was built to offer Sharum every advantage. But now, they are in the open streets of the city, in the poorest district where wardings are meagre at best. The Chi Sharum, warriors levied from the Thesan thralls of the Maja tribe, outnumber the Dal Sharum. They have inferior training and equipment, but despite the bragging of the Fullbloods, they are a formidable force, motivated as much by the need to protect their families as a sense of duty. They have locked shields across the narrow streets, creating bottlenecks that drive the demons away from the fleeing Thesans.
They should be killing, not holding the Alagai at bay,
Chikka growls, but he is careful not to make it seem a criticism of the Sharum Ka, who watches impassively. If the goal is to protect life, the Chi Sharum are taking the wisest course, deflecting the enemy until their families can reach safety. We descend from the wall via a guard tower to a plaza where Iraven's warriors are already mustering. The demons haven't gotten this far yet, but it won't be long if they are not contained. Pit warders, the elite Dal Sharum who maintain the wards in the maze, have already prepared a solution in the form of a cartload of ward posts.
Sharum Ka, their Kai steps forward. We can form a ward circle around the breach, but we will need to contain the Alagai long enough to set and align the posts.
How long?
Iriven asks.
If the plaza was clear, perhaps 10 minutes, the Kai says. In this chaos?
He shrugs.
What will stop them from tunnelling somewhere else?
Chikka asks.
There are wards built into the foundations of the city, the Kai says. I do not think this was spontaneous or luck. It would have taken the Alagai some time to dig this tunnel without anyone noticing.
Waning, Iriven says. A demon prince is directing them.
The mines are all dead. I want to believe it. I need to believe it. But the way that demon looked at me. I get that feeling in my stomach, like I might be sick, and breathe in rhythm as the drill masters taught us, embracing the feeling rather than fighting it, then blowing it out with my breath. For the first time, I wish for my mother's warded cloak, left in my chambers 1,000 miles away. I want to run away, to hide in the Undercity. I will draw callings like flies if they see me, putting everyone in danger. Iriven is shouting orders, readying his men with talk of Everam and glory. Would he listen if I went to him now? I don't think so. Certainly Chikka would not. I heft the shield, large and heavy, made of wood with a warded sheet of steel hammered and riveted to its convex surface. It is proof against any calling blow. The circle of wards around the rim is large enough to stand on, offering an area of protection just large enough to create a forbidding around a single warrior. Keep low, I whisper to myself. Do your job and get to the Undercity. What was that? Chadan asks. The first words he's spoken to me since breakfast. I shake the fear away, meeting his eyes. Nothing, Nika. He eyes me a moment, then nods, shouting orders much like Iraven. Chadan has trained all his life for this, and it shows. As the Dal Shaarum make for the breach, we cut through the warded doorways of buildings to get behind the Chi Shaarum lines. The streets are in chaos. Some of the Qin have lanterns, and there are a few lamps burning in the streets, but they do little to abate the darkness. Folk stumble, half blind, some carrying children or pulling them by the hand. Others struggle to assist the elderly and infirm. Just a few blocks away, ward light flashes like lightning as warriors shout and demons shriek, adding terror to the frantic evacuation. We Ni Shaarum have wards of sight painted around our eyes, powered by the ambient magic in the air. Instead of light, we see the world illuminated by the spectrum of magic, the ambient power all around us, the wards that gather it, and the auras of living things. It is more powerful than normal vision, but the extra input takes time to grow accustomed to. A woman rushing with a babe in her arms shoulders past a grey-bearded man, knocking him to the paving stones. She runs on, oblivious, but Chadan points. Divan, help him. The rest of you, make sure these buildings are empty and lead the people to the Undercity entrance. As Cheekka warned, several of the Undercity entrances are no longer usable, rusted or collapsed after 20 years of neglect. The nearest working one is a mile away, not far for a swift-footed Ni Shaarum, but for folk fumbling in dim lamplight through the dark, slowed by children, old and infirm, it is a considerable distance. Here and there, Chi Shaarum deserters escort their families. The wards on the helms under their dark green turbans allow them to see in ward sight, and they search the darkness, looking for threats. They eye us warily, knowing there will be a heavy price if they live to see the dawn and we report them for breaking ranks. But they are armed and armoured, and we are not. If Chadan were to challenge them now, it would not end well for us. To his credit, Chadan is more focused on getting folk to safety. A young boy rides his back like a camel as he guides a woman and her elderly mother through the darkness, calling commands all the while. A scrabbling sound is the only warning as a sand demon drops on a woman carrying two children. Her sharp cry is quickly silenced by its talons and razor teeth. Her aura, bright a moment ago, snuffs like a candle before my eyes. I spare a glance upward, and terror grips me. They're on the rooftops. The buildings are crawling with sand and clay demons, climbing the facades like spiders and running along the roofs. Unable to get past the warriors locking shields across the streets, they went up the walls instead. Here and there, defensive wards flash, but even these are old and poorly maintained. There hasn't been a demon in the city in centuries. A clay demon drops onto Chadan, but he is ready, raising his shield over both himself and the boy on his back. The wards flash as the demon scrabbles for purchase. Chadan sets the boy down lightly, then puts his shoulder into a shield rush that drives the calling into a warded doorway. Caught between two ward nets, power shocks through the creature and it drops to the ground, stunned. Take who you can and run! Chadan cries as the calling shakes itself off, struggling to regain its feet. It's a practical decision, the kind of command Prince Chadan was trained for, the kind that decides lives. For, of course, who you can means those with a chance of outrunning the demons. The two children the slaughtered woman was carrying shriek and dart after the crowd, but the sand demon, jaws still wet with the mother's blood, tamps down to go after them. It is met instead with a pair of Chi Shaarum. The warriors come at it from two sides, batting its swiping paws aside with shields as they stab with their long spears. The demon is quickly dispatched, but while their attention is fixed on it, more drop from above.
One sinks its teeth into a warrior's neck, and hot blood, bright with his lifelight, spurts like a fountain from the wound. Unable to bring his spear to bear, the warrior drops it, fumbling for the knife on his belt, even as his life bleeds away. I can see his aura dimming, like a lamp being turned down. The blade is still half in its sheath as he drops to his knees. The demon kicks its hind legs, shredding the warrior's robe until his armor plates fall away and it reaches the vulnerable flesh beneath. The other warrior gets his shield up in time to deflect an attack from above, but the demon lands on its paws a few feet away. It is joined by another, as they come at him from opposite sides, hunting in concert. More demons are landing in the street, and I know it's only a matter of time before they spot me. I should run, but I stand, transfixed by the scene. A cry catches my attention, and I see the fruit seller from earlier in the day, her robes lifted above bare legs as she runs from a clay demon. Surprisingly quick on its stubby legs, the Corling can see in the darkness, while she is half blind. It gains rapidly.